Here another parable. There was a householder who planted a vineyard and set a hedge around it, dug a wine press in it, built a tower, and then let it out to tenants. Then he went into a far country. When the season of fruit drew near, he sent his servants to the tenants to get his fruit, but the tenants took his servants and beat one, killed another, and stoned another. Again, he sent other servants, more than the first this time, but they did the same thing to them. Afterward, he sent his son, saying, "They'll respect my son." But when the tenants saw the son, they said to themselves, "This is the heir. Come, let's kill him, and then we'll have the inheritance." They took him, they cast him out of the vineyard, they killed him. When therefore the owner of the vineyard comes, what will he do to those tenants? They said to him, "He'll put those wretches to a miserable death. He'll let that vineyard to other tenants who will give him the fruits in their season." Jesus said to them, "Have you not read the scriptures? The very stone which the builders rejected has become the head of the corner. This was the Lord's doing, and it was marvelous in his eyes." When I was in the seminary, my first paying church job was as janitor number two. I've mentioned that to some of you. And I found that, like most church jobs, it had a rather far-ranging job description, which included teaching the oldest women's Bible class. It was a mutually, spiritually symbiotic relationship. I taught them Bible. They mothered me lavishly. And they hired me to do a lot of jobs, which is to say I did a lot of lawn tending and grass cutting and a lot of house sitting, oddly enough. And I gained quite a reputation as a house sitter because I kept two important things in mind: what the house looked like when the owner left and what time the owner was returning. In between, I could be my rather messy self, as long as in the end I made sure that everything looked just perfect when the owner returned. And that system worked perfectly until the night it didn't. Two older sisters went away on a 10-day trip right near the end of a semester. And I can make a big mess in 10 days. Plus, it was the end of the semester, so I was writing papers, I was giving lectures, I was grading papers. And on a Friday night, I was taking a young hottie named Melissa out for a cheap night out on the town. But that was okay because the sisters weren't coming back till Sunday, and I had all day Saturday to clean up. So imagine my surprise when we returned to the house and their car was in the driveway. My career as a house sitter ended that night. Now, as painful as it is to share that story, it is a perfect lead-in to a series of parables that Jesus tells in this chapter and around it. He talks about a man who invested in creating a vineyard. He planted the vineyard. He dug for wine press. He erected a hedge around it. He built a tower. And then he hired some tenants and went off on an extended trip. Jesus tells another story similar to it of a group of young women who were gathered outside the bride's house waiting for the groom to come collect his beloved and then escort them all to a lavish feast at his home. But some of them hadn't prepared adequately, and when the groom was delayed, when he came, they weren't ready. So only half of them were able to enjoy the feast. Jesus tells the story of a master who gave his servants talents, to one 5, to one 3, to another 1, and then went off to see how they would invest what he had given them. Now there was a theme to all of these stories. The theme is the master was away. The master was absent. And the question became, what did people do when the master was perceived to be gone? Jesus is exploring our spiritual motivation. A wise man once said, character is what you do when nobody is looking. Spirituality is what you do even when you don't feel the master's presence. All of these parables of Jesus explore people's spirituality when they think that the master is away. What exactly is our motivation for true devotion to God? I mean, there are a host of studies out there that establish incontrovertibly religious people tend to live longer, they tend to be happier, they tend to be healthier than people who have no religious belief. They tend to be better adjusted or able to handle stress greater, more easily, partially because they're a part of a community. Is our motivation for our devotion to God the fact that we reap all of these benefits? True devotion to God is doing the right thing because we know it's the right thing to do. Jesus is exploring what we do when we feel like God's not really watching. God's not really hovering over us. And we're not in the midst of other people that are faithful. We can do what we want. Blessed, says Jesus, are those bridesmaids who are prepared for whenever the groom comes, even when the groom's not there, when he's late. Blessed are those servants who take whatever talent the master gives them and does their very best with them, even when the master seems to be away and not looking. Cursed are those young women who just don't fully prepare when the master's absent. Cursed are those servants who think the master begrudges them their talent and they bury it. Cursed are those tenants who think because the master's away, we now own the vineyard and we can do as we please. True spirituality, says Jesus, is how we act, how we conduct ourselves, how our lives are oriented around values, even when we don't sense God absolutely present in our lives. What do we do when the master's away? We can each appropriate this lesson of Jesus for our own lives individually. But he wasn't just telling this story for our individual lives. He was telling it as a way of communicating and characterizing all of society. When God is sensed as absent, often God is seen as not real. God is seen as not relevant. How then do societies respond? The 19th century prophet and writer Fyodor Dostoevsky said with great prescience, "Without God, everything is permitted." He was so right. His spiritual successor, his fellow Russian writer Alexander Solzhenitsyn, looked at all of the brutality, the sustained immorality of the Russian culture, and said it was all because people forgot God. A social critic said, "Where a people do not have a God to worship, they will resort to warfare and racial hatred to try to bring together the commonality and the call of transcendence that the human breast requires." The greatest poet of the 20th century, a man by the name of T.S. Eliot, before he became a Christian, wrote a celebrated poem called The Wasteland. And a friend of his asked, "Mr. Eliot, do you really believe that's how things will end?" And as a non-believer at that point, Eliot said, "Yes, it will end with people killing each other in the street because there is no sense of God." I thought of those analyses as I was thinking about periods in our recent history where law and order broke down, when the power went out in New York City, and murder and mayhem and looting took place throughout the entire area. Riots in L.A., where police later found the dorm rooms of UCLA and USC students stocked with stolen goods. And businesses had films of people driving Cadillacs and Lexus and BMWs, pulling up in front of electronic stores and going in and stealing stuff to steal while the getting was good. The word that all of the social critics used to describe those scenes was anarchy, which literally means no leader. What does society do when it feels a sense of no true divine leader? But Jesus is a master storyteller. And like all great storytellers, he has a stinger in his stories. Yeah, in all of his stories, the master appears to be absent. And yet, hear these words. "The king will say to those at his right hand, 'Come, blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. I was hungry, you gave me food. Thirsty, and you gave me drink. A stranger, and you welcomed me. Naked, and you clothed me. Sick, and you visited me. In prison, and you came to me.' And the righteous will answer him, 'Lord, when did we see thee hungry and feed thee? Or thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you a stranger and welcome you? Naked and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and visit you?' And the king will answer, 'When you did it to the least of my brethren, you did it unto me.'" In other words, says Jesus, the master is never really absent. He's always present, often present in the faces of the dispossessed and those accounted as least worthy among you. But know that when you see them, you may well be beholding the presence of God. These parables try to reveal the nature of God and the nature of God's kingdom. And the whole story of Holy Week is really the story of our King taking off his royal robes and entering the world in disguise to see how people really treat him. And he discovers that for most people, they don't consider God to be God. They've arrogated that right to themselves. And so it is. They feel justified in rejecting the Son of the Master when he comes to his own, because they think they own the vineyard. They're the real masters. They feel justified in nailing this rabble-rousing rabbi to a cross, because, hey, they're really in control. The Romans and the religious leadership of the Sanhedrin, they feel empowered to work together to eliminate Jerusalem of this holy man. Because after all, they're the real owners of the place. They think the true master is away, when in fact, the master is right there in their midst, the star of the show, the entire time. The master never left. When you take these two stories of Jesus, what you realize is that the Christian depiction of God is the most extraordinary and expansive picture of God that's ever been presented. You can see the face of God in that tortured, crucified Jesus of Nazareth. There you find the love and redemptive nature of God on display. And you also find him in the face of the hungry and the thirsty and the poor in spirit, the dispossessed, the imprisoned, and the outcast. It is the most expansive depiction of God ever offered. And it's too wide, too wonderful to come from any human mind. It can only come out of the heart and mind of our Creator God and our Savior Christ. We invite you now to stand and sing with us as Angela and Eric come.